Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC in New York, this is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Coming up on the show, we have a really great set from John Fulbright. He's a gifted young singer-songwriter from Oklahoma who reminds me a little bit of a cross between Randy Newman and Rufus Wainwright.
I just want to set things straight, apologize to you, and somebody tell me what's so bad about how.
That's a little bit from John Fulbright's new album called simply Songs. And he'll play some songs at our piano later on the show. And more music from the summer of 94 as our ongoing series dives into the album Ill Communication by the Beastie Boys. But first, it's time to discuss one of the most controversial moments of that year 20 years ago. No, not the O.J. Simpson trial. Not the baseball strike. Nope, I'm talking about Ace of Base. 20 years ago this summer, the Swedish pop group Ace of Base had a number one hit with this song, The Sign. The album it came from sold 9 million copies, and with their danceable electronic confections and gender-balanced band lineup, Ace of Base seemed like a logical heir to the throne of ABBA. But while lots of people loved the band, the album did go platinum 9 times over, many people didn't. Which brings us to the next logical conclusion.
Soundcheck Smackdown!
Yes, it is time for a vintage 1994-era edition of our Soundcheck Smackdown, and joining me in the ring today are the radio hosts Mario Correa and Julia Cunningham. You can hear them on Entertainment Weekly Radio on Sirius XM, but today they will engage in brutal blood sport in the name of Ace of Base. Godspeed to both of you.
Yes, well.
Welcome back.
I was going to throw a bunch of singles at you, but I'll save
9
that.
Million of them, maybe?
Yeah.
I figured.
All right, so let me ask each of you, where were you, what were you doing in the summer of 1994. Julia?
Well, I was 9 years old, so of course I fell in love with really catchy pop music. And I texted my sister last night and I said, did I actually own the single of The Sign or did I steal it from you? No response. So I'm assuming I did actually own it, and I remember possibly cracking it listening to it so much.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, that's right, Mario. Cracking
Mario.
It.
I was just a couple of years out of college, and so I felt that I was very mature and earnest and had a lot to contribute to the world, and something as vapid and pointless and earwormy as The Sign was beneath me.
Snob.
So for the 9-year-old, for the 9-year-old Julia, this you think this is?
I think
who
it's perfect for a 9-year-old. That encapsulates the entirety of The Sign. Let's keep it to 9-year-olds. But the
it's
problem was
fair.
It wasn't kept to 9-year-olds.
No!
All the rest of us had to.
It swept
to
it. The world, Mario. The world.
What did you love about it? What do you love about it? Because you clearly still do love it.
I still really enjoy it. I think it is just kind of one of those songs that gets in your head. Like, you can listen to it 100 times as a 9-year-old, and it just stays kind of surface. You know, it's just kind of catchy. Mm-hmm. It just kind of stays with you. And I think especially for children, it's the same way, like, kids love Beyoncé. There's just, like, a certain rhythm, you know, that I think I just became obsessed with as a child.
Let's hear it. Ace of Base, The Sign. With The Sign, huge hit that summer of 94. And the subject of our Soundcheck Smackdown, Mario Correa, Julia Cunningham, the hosts of Entertainment Weekly Radio with me here in the Soundcheck studio. Now, Julia, you were just saying that as a nine-year-old, you know, the surface of the song was something that your nine-year-old ears could just skim along.
Yeah.
Is there anything underneath it?
Ooh, that's where I think my argument is, like, really kind of tough to hold up to.
Swedish reggae, maybe?
Yeah, exactly. There is, you know, some Swedish, or, I mean, interpretation of, like, reggae dubstep in there that I think really, you know, made me feel amazing. I remember watching the music video and thinking, yeah, when I grow up, I just need a fan blowing on me at all times, my shirt like billowing, like waving around to this song. Lyrically, yeah, I mean, it's not the strongest. I don't think it really stands the test of time lyrically, maybe. But I do like the idea that the man who wrote it, Jonas, who is one of the members of Ace of Base, he will never tell exactly what that sign is. He likes to hold it close to him. He will not reveal what the sign is.
Oh, that makes me change my mind. No,
right?
It doesn't.
There's mystery behind it, Mario.
Oh, God.
Mystery.
What an enigma. What a Swedish reggae enigma.
Yes. Thank you, Mario. You're right.
Mario, why? Why don't you like the sign? Why have you not drunk the Kool-Aid?
Well, gosh, organizing this argument could take me all day, but I'm gonna hit the main points, John. First, you mentioned ABBA, which is often mentioned in relation to Ace of Base, because they clearly weren't influenced by being just ABBA being a humongous, seismic Swedish band, but they could also sing, which made a real sort of distinction between them and Ace of Base. I mean, literally, one of the two women, literally, it's two men and two women, just like an ABBA, blondes and brunettes, just like an ABBA. And the brunette, Jenny, in Ace of Base, struggles to hit the notes in the song. And I'm thinking, with all that production, like, you couldn't either change the note or hit it. So that's just my first issue with it.
Nailed it.
Bring me joy. Sorry, but I deserve to be a member of Ace of Base with my level of singing. I think I'm qualified.
And what else did you not like about it?
You know, I didn't like that the lyrics sort of said nothing. I also thought that it really was too earwormy. And I realized you want a pop song to have a great hook. But I just didn't hear anything but a hook on the song. And the incredible, like, relentlessness. I mean, literally, this song hit number one for 6 weeks non-consecutively. I mean, it literally went to the top of the charts, fell, and then people just pushed it back up because it was inescapable.
You couldn't get enough.
Yeah, well.
Could not get enough of the sign.
It was all the nine-year-olds.
Exactly. It was me, that nine-year-old buying more and more singles.
There is a very funny episode of South Park where they unfreeze a man who's been, like, frozen in time from, like, 1994 or 5. And, you know, he's they've put him in, like, a little cage, like, zoo-style thing with a sofa and a stereo, and it's playing Ace of Base, the sign.
You know? Of course.
It's amazing.
So it has become a cultural touchstone.
It has. You know,
or
it really
a punchline, depending on how
or
you
both.
Look.
You know what I find fascinating about this album, too, is that it was originally released in Europe called Happy Nation, and they couldn't get distribution in the United States, and Clive Davis heard it, and he said, we can work with this. We can make this work. And he made them change it to the sign and make that be the lead single. He said this is the hit on the album, which is kind of hilarious when we look back at it.
Aretha Franklin, Whitney Houston, and Ace of Base.
And Ace of Base.
Discoveries,
you know what?
Of Clive Davis.
Made
Clive
tons
Davis,
of
man,
money,
evil
know?
Genius.
Yeah.
Soundcheck listeners, how do you feel about Ace of Base and the sign and the summer of 1994? You can call us at 866-939-1612. Leave us a voicemail. That's 866-939-1612. Or leave a comment on our website at soundcheck.org. Whatever you think about Ace of Base, it continues to kind of, you know, infect various parts of the interwebs. And so, you know, you troll through YouTube and you find a lot of people still doing versions of The Sign.
The sun, and it opened up my eyes. I saw the sun. Life is demanding without understanding. Life is demanding without understanding. Marshall sign, and it opened.
That last one wasn't so bad.
I know, like, see, lyrically does hold up.
I was just going to say, any of those float your boat, Mario? Last one's not bad.
You know, if I had to, if I lived in a dystopian future where I had to hear The Sign again, that last version would be the one that I would hear.
That's a pop-punk version by Nate Vale and Jesse Vale. We also heard a kind of bluegrass version from Anna Vogelzang and a ukulele cover. There's always a ukulele cover of something on YouTube from Nicole He. And our Soundcheck Smackdown has been focusing on one of the big hits of the summer of 20 years ago, Ace of Base with The Sign. The song has endured. What about the band?
Ooh, I mean, there are versions of Ace of Base. The ladies no longer together, but we still have a sort of band of Ace of Base between Buddha and Joker. That's Jonas. And they together still kind of make Ace of Base work.
And hilariously, I think one of the women sued them for still using the name, so they changed it to Ace period of period base period. To make it
so
a different...
So smart.
Exactly, wow. I was going to say. And that tells you
what
all
lawyer,
you need to
what
know.
What lawyer won't be fooled by that?
Exactly. That's really Ace of Base, period, in a nutshell, period.
And that is our Soundcheck Smackdown. And once again, Mario Correa, Julia Cunningham, the co-hosts of Entertainment Weekly Radio on Sirius XM. Guys, good to have you back.
Thank you.
It was fun.
All this week on the show, we've been asking you to tell us what you were doing during the summer of 94 and what you were listening to. Here's what one listener told us.
Hey, it's Nick Nicoletta. In the summer of 1994, I graduated high school in Oyster Bay, Long Island, St. Dominic's. I was listening to Tribe Called Quest. I was listening to Smashing Pumpkins. I was listening to Pearl Jam. That's pretty much my summer of 94. It was a great year. And, of course, let's not forget the Notorious B.I.G. Thanks.
Throw your hands in the air if you's a true player.
I love it when you call me Big Poppa.
To the honeys getting money, playing fellas like dummies.
I love it when you call me Big Poppa.
You got a gun up in your waist, please don't shoot up the place.
Why?
'Cause I see some ladies tonight that should be having my baby, baby.
Thanks to Nick from Oyster Bay for that call. And by the way, if you missed our segment on this album, Notorious B.I.G.'s album Ready to Die, it's in our archives at soundcheck.org. And you can tell us your summer of 94 story at 866-939-1612. Again, that number is 866-939-1612. And the summer of 94 continues here on Soundcheck. Up next, we look at the album Ill Communication by the Beastie Boys. And then we'll get back to the present day with a performance by the singer-songwriter John Fulbright. This is Soundcheck. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Our retrospective look at the summer of 94 continues. We leave the world of Ace of Base, thankfully perhaps, for the world of hip-hop, rock, and roots music. That's Root Down, just one of the great tracks from the album Ill Communication, the fourth album by the Beastie Boys. It was released in the summer of 94 and went on to sell 9 million copies. It was the first rap album to top the Billboard 200 chart, and Amos Barshad, staff writer for Grantland, has just published a piece commemorating the anniversary of Ill Communication. Amos, welcome back to Soundcheck.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So this is, let's get this out of the way, first of all. The song Sabotage comes from Ill Communication. B,
big hit casts a huge shadow. But before we get to that later, we think of the Beastie Boys as a very New York band.
Absolutely.
Where were they when they made this record?
They were in Los Angeles.
Nope! And this is what they were doing out there in L.A.
For them is bony. Gotta do it like this, like Chachi and Joni.
Cause she's the cheese and I'm the macaroni. So why all the fight? Why all the fuss? Cause I ain't got no money. Yeah, you know I'm getting silly. Got a grandma Hazel and a grandma Chili. I'm a grand royal prince and I'm also a member. Born on the cusp in the month of November. I do the patty duke in the case you don't remember. Well, I freak up on your feet like the hell was in a blender.
Slick to do, I play like I'm hard, but I'ma drive the lane like I was ever benign.
And I've been working on my game, life is taxing.
Gotta get it together and see what's happening.
Get it together.
Wait a minute.
Little bit of the Beastie Boys' Get It Together from their album Ill Communication, which was one of the top records of that summer of 94. So, Amos, let's put this in a little bit of context. First of all, the title, Ill Communication, what did that refer to?
I think, I don't know if it was in that clip that we just heard, but it is on that song. And I think it's Q-Tip just talking about Ma Bell, the phone company.
Right.
I'm sure there was some deeper inside joke things going on that... You know, we haven't uncovered the Beastie Boys always kind of winking and nodding all over the place, but literally that's what it is.
Now, at this point, summer of 94, the Beastie Boys, they are co-headlining Lollapalooza.
Mm-hmm.
They're kind of at the top of their game.
Yeah.
Where does this album fit into the Beastie Boys catalog?
Well, I guess it's kind of right in the middle. This is a bit of a transition. By the end of the recording sessions, they... do head back to New York. I think they're going back and forth. I don't know exactly when they did move back, but after their huge debut, License to Ill, they kind of did a 180, went to L.A., made Paul's Boutique, which, you know, drastically different album.
Full of samples.
Yeah. And then, you know, they kept changing again, Check Your Head, and then...
Where they started playing instruments again.
That's
because
right.
They started as a hardcore punk band.
Oh, yeah, big time, yeah.
And there's some of that on this record, too.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I mean, to me, Check Your Head and Communication are definitely complementary albums in that the balance between, you know, live music, the instruments that they're picking up and the straight-up rap stuff is very similar.
Right. All right, so let's get to the big hit of the summer of 94 for the Beastie Boys, Sabotage.
Yeah.
This sort of walks a line between their sort of dual nature as a rock band and rappers.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, sadly enough, and this is something they nodded to later, the rap rock hybrid could be traced back to them, unfortunately. but I think they did it in a restrained way, you know.
Yeah.
Didn't overdo it at all, in a fun kind of tongue-in-cheek way. And this song, I mean, I remember seeing the video as a kid and it kind of just blowing my mind.
Just a little bit of Sabotage, breakout hit from the album Ill Communication from that summer of 20 years ago for the Beastie Boys. We're speaking with Amos Barshad of Grantland. His piece is called Ill Communication at 20, an everything guide to the Beastie Boys masterpiece. Is this song representative of Ill Communication?
Not really, no. And the funny thing is the backstory is it was one of the last things they wrote and recorded, and were just kind of messing around in the studio, and they had this engineer, I think it was an engineer, who just was always in there feeling very blasé about all the stuff they were doing, and this was the one time that they got him to jump out of his chair, freak out, so they knew they had to do something with it.
I mean, it almost sounds like the Beatles Helter Skelter with, you know, with some turntable scratching. And
yeah, yeah. I know, yeah. I wonder if they knew that it had the hit potential that it did.
Well, at some point early on, the decision to make the video was made. Mm-hmm. So they must have known that there was something there. Now, yeah. The story of the video is integral to the story of the success of this song.
Yeah, yeah, with their good buddy Spike Jones. They went out and bought those now iconic cop outfits and created these characters and just seemed to have an amazing time on set and yeah, created a classic.
So it's basically a parody of all those 70s and 80s cop shows.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah, these guys are always churning out stuff from their childhood and reappropriating any way they want.
And this actually was kind of – this jump-started Spike Jonze's career too, didn't it?
Yeah, I mean, he was definitely doing videos all over the place, but I would say this was still his most popular, his greatest success.
And they would go on to kind of build on the success. I mean, basically the video, for folks who haven't seen it, is it's like the trailer or the opening credits. It's like a 3-minute long opening credits.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
For a cop show.
And over the years, you know, they had talked about making a movie, which I assume they would have, you know, I think it would have been pretty non-linear, so they would have threaded some of this stuff in, which is too bad that we'll never get to see what they would have done expanding on this stuff.
Yeah. But the allusions to pop culture, I mean, it's not just TV shows and Ma Bell. It's baseball players, basketball players, jazz. There's pop culture dripping out of almost every pore on this record.
No, it's insane. They just open their mouths and all these things pinging around their heads. I mean, the 94 Knicks, I think, are really well represented, which as they should be, of course. but it's intimidating and thrilling also. I mean, it's just kind of fun to listen to these guys name drop and try to follow them down all these different rabbit holes.
Yeah. Now, one of the other songs that has aged pretty well is Sure Shot, which you explain in your article for Grantland was actually kind of a song that wasn't happening, wasn't going anywhere until they made a phone call.
Yeah, they had to tell this great story in the liner notes of their anthology. They called their DJ at the time, DJ Hurricane. You know, they needed a chorus. They knew it needed a chorus. They couldn't figure it out. They call him in the middle of the night, and supposedly he records it over the phone, sleepy, in the middle of the night, and that's the recording that they went with.
Sure Shot is the name of the song.
Well, it's a taking off the bell of 1, 2, 3.
Beastie Boys, Sure Shot, from their album from the summer of 94 called Ill Communication. And we're speaking with Amos Barshad, staff writer at Grantland. His piece is called Ill Communication at 20, an everything guide to the Beastie Boys masterpiece. Just in that little clip, we get shout-outs to Mario Caldado, who was their producer, very important part of the band sound.
Right-hand man, absolutely.
And to Rod Carew, the great second baseman of the Minnesota Twins.
That's right.
So, now, DJ Hurricane comes in and saves the day with this song.
Yeah.
There aren't a lot of collaborators on this Beastie Boys album, but it's a pretty kind of righteous group of people who are allowed through the door.
Right, yeah. I mean, Q-Tip, which was their good friend, you know, they always had, you know, Mario Caldado, Money Mark, their keyboardist, you know, they always had their crew. And
Bismarcky's on it.
A good friend of the band.
So one of the things that people noted about the record was it's long, 20. I mean, some of the tracks are really short. You know, Tough Guy is less than a minute long. It's like a great piece of like classic hardcore punk, you know, over in 60 seconds.
Right, you don't need anything more than that.
But 20 tracks, you know, so it's all over the map.
Yeah, definitely.
Stylistically.
I mean, you could kind of get amped up for the first half, and if you want to maybe like take a book out, you know, take a nap a little bit for the second half. It becomes a little bit more MCA's show for the second half. Some of his influences. And it definitely takes a turn.
It takes a turn towards the east, specifically towards Tibet, for a couple of tracks. Mm-hmm. There's Shambhala, and then there's also this track called Bodhisattva Vow, which has the kind of chanting of Tibetan monks looped in the background. I can't imagine, you know, Beastie Boy fans really knowing what to make of that.
Yeah, and I'm glad you didn't make me say the title. Thank you.
But that was apparently inspired by MCA meeting the Dalai Lama.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not sure exactly when, but at some point in the early 90s, he began this, interest in
Buddhism,
Dalai Lama, and studying all this stuff. And he writes in the anthology also, you know, he's definitely an amateur, but he was so enamored that he really just wanted to express some of his appreciation for this stuff. You know, he kind of makes fun of himself for having the temerity to try to capture it in a song. But, you know, at the same time, I think it's definitely, like you said, you're exposing it to an audience that otherwise would never be exposed to it.
Right. And MCA, the late Adam Yauch, he was serious about this.
Oh, yeah,
you know, this
yeah.
is still early days,
right.
but he, you know, got deeply into this.
Yeah,
it became a major part of his life.
Absolutely, yeah. Throughout the rest of his life was a constant presence, yeah, absolutely.
Bodhisattva Vow is the name of this deep cut from the album Ill Communication. Bodhisattva Vow, one of the unexpected tracks, the late Adam Yauch, a.k.a. MCA, the Beastie Boys, sort of taking the album in another direction, Amos, as it got towards the end.
Yeah, just hearing that line, you know, someone disrespect me, gives me flack, I stop and think before I react. One of the least hip-hop things to have ever been said on a hip-hop song.
I take a deep calming breath.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it is a bit. I'm not sure if he completely nailed what he was going for, as he probably would admit. But I think it's really interesting to hear him try.
Listeners, what about you? What was your first experience with this Beastie Boys album called Ill Communication? 20th anniversary, came out the summer of '94. Huge commercial success, and lots of really interesting artistic things to talk about. The variety that Amos has mentioned. Let us know what your experience with the album was. Go to our website, soundcheck.org, and leave your story there. So, you obviously think this record has aged pretty well. You said before, I could listen to another 20 times.
Yeah.
Why? Where is it in the pantheon of Beastie Boys albums? Is this your favorite?
It's a tough question, but I'm glad you asked because, you know, we use the masterpiece in the headline, which for me meant one of their many masterpieces.
Okay.
But the commenters were very upset actually about how we disrespected Paul's Boutique. There was a strong contingent arguing for Paul's Boutique, which is the Paul's Boutique nerds are strong, you know, absolutely. So
it's a very different kind of album.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, Paul's Boutique is so intricate in its multiple layers samples. It's huge.
Totally, you can unpack it for days. But I mean, I think Ill Communication to me is I think as we said before, the Beastie Boys at full power. It seems to me like they're doing what they want. And it's so almost a cleaner record. Like, I guess for me, I would go back to Check Your Head, a little rougher, a little rawer, still them working this stuff out. And that's always fascinating to hear. But at the same time, you know, Ill Communication, just seeing a band just nail it after, you know, song after song is always great.
9 million copies later, it still stands up.
Yeah.
20 years later, we've been looking back. As part of our series, The Summer of 94, at Ill Communication by the Beastie Boys, Amos Barshad's article for Grantland is called Ill Communication at 20, an everything guide to the Beastie Boys masterpiece. Find a link on our website, soundcheck.org. Amos, good to see you again.
Absolutely, so good to be here.
Okay, a lot of you have been giving us your memories of that summer of 94 and what you were listening to on our listener line. Here are a couple that, well, I didn't see coming, but I really enjoyed hearing them.
Hello, my name's Dave from Portland, Maine, and summer of 94, right into the surfing, right into the Cypress Hill, kicking it with my boys down at Higgins Beach, and having a great summer. Met my wife, my ex-wife, got really serious, and had a great run of 20 years, and now I'm single again and starting over 20 years later. Thank you. Have a good afternoon.
Hi, my name is Inara. I live in New York, New York. I was in Karachi, Pakistan in the summer of 1994. I was immersed in Britpop, listening to Oasis, Blur, and Pulp, with a nice sprinkling of Seattle with Soundgarden, Nirvana, and Pearl Jam. 1994 was high school for me, and it was the last summer that I would spend with my father. I lost my father in August of that summer, so it's sort of the last carefree summer of my life.
Well, for those two listeners, the summer of 1994 was truly a pivotal time. Things changed, and you'll notice that both Dave and Zanera remember pretty clearly what they were listening to that summer. Cypress Hill for Dave, and for Zanera, who was still in Pakistan, the early sounds of Britpop.
I've got to slow it right down. The days may be just too fast for me.
That is Oasis and the early song called Rock and Roll Star from them. What were you listening to in the summer of 94? Leave us a voicemail at 866-939-1612. That's 866-939-1612. Up next, live music in the studio from singer-songwriter John Fulbright. This is Soundcheck. Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. The Oklahoma native John Fulbright released his debut album in 2012 and was immediately lauded as a gifted new songwriter and performer. From the Ground Up was even nominated for a Grammy in the Best Americana category, and this song in the background, God Above, was featured in the film August, Osage County. The 26-year-old has just released a new album that showcases more of his original songwriting, but introduces a spare instrumental sound. John Fulbright joins us live in the Soundcheck studio at our piano to play When You're Here from his new album called Songs.
Ever changing, ever moving, ever finding, ever losing, every moment of our choosing bears a cost. And as for lonely, I can show you how to live a life alone. All it takes is getting used to getting lost. Well, some are lovers, some are leeches, some are flings on sandy beaches, some are silent till the chances are all gone. The Queen of Hearts dreams a lover from that cold, cold king above her, while the Joker makes his bed up all alone. But don't I feel like something when you're here? Don't I feel my lungs feel like I can show you I'm the one you can go to when you need another heartbeat near. Don't I feel like something when you're here? My heart stands a scarecrow, and if he's hurt, he doesn't say so, and he chases everything he loves away. But at night, when it's colder, there's a bluebird on his shoulder, and he whispers that he'll hold. Don't I feel like something when you're here? Don't I feel my lungs losing air? Well, don't I feel like I can show you I'm the one you can go to when you need another heartbeat near? I feel like something when you're here.
That's John Fulbright live in the Soundcheck studio with his song When You're Here. John sings, plays the piano. He also plays the guitar, though he's sticking to the piano for us today. The new album is called Songs. It is out now. And John, I mentioned in introducing you that you're from Oklahoma. You're in fact from Okemah, Oklahoma, right?
That's right.
Which is... if people know that town, they know it because it's the birthplace of Woody Guthrie.
Yeah, that's right.
How big a deal is that back in Okemah? Are there, like, you know, is there a Woody Guthrie museum, or is everything, like, labeled Woody Guthrie?
Well, we have a festival now. Actually, I think it's starting today. That's a pretty big deal for Oklahoma, but, I mean, it was a big deal in a negative way for years and years, yeah, that Woody was... Okemah didn't really like Woody's politics too much.
So he was not the favorite son, is what you're saying.
Not at all. No, no.
Is it different now? Has it changed?
It's different. Well, no one's scared of... well, I mean, I say that, but I mean, there's the kind of McCarthyism stuff has kind of died off enough. And, you know, you're so far separated from what Woody was in that, yeah, it's definitely tamed down quite a bit. I mean, there's still... I'm not saying it's disappeared.
Right, right.
But it's tamed down quite a bit.
Huh. So, growing up in Okemah, is there a kind of a thriving folk music scene? I mean, where do you, as a young singer-songwriter, go to play?
My bedroom. That's about all the scene there was for me. yeah, playing music was a pretty lonely thing to do. Until that festival would roll to town, and then, you know, that Woody Fest, which is, it gets bigger and bigger every year, and I, you know, I can remember maybe 7 years ago, or 8 years ago, I would go to that and play guitar and banjo with these other like-minded people once a year, and then the circus would pack up and roll away, and I would be sad, you know. I'd wait a whole year, and they'd come back. Uh-huh. I'd learn a few more songs.
Well, now, Songs is, in fact, the name of this second record that you've done.
Well, it's the songs that have carried me through. You know, the idea of being a touring musician or even a recording musician, that like singing in tune and learning how to play an instrument and all that stuff, that wasn't as big of a deal to me as writing something that I thought was going to carry me through. I'm really bad at titles, for one, but I didn't want there to be any presupposed notion about what this record was going to be, especially after the pressure of that last one getting nominated for a Grammy, you know.
Well, but that last record had a very different sound. I mean, the songs on that record, as we heard in God Above, you know, you were plugged in, there was like a band kind of sound. This record is very close to what you're doing for us today, isn't it?
Yeah, but that's not me. I don't have any idea what I'm doing. I don't have any vision or goal, but I just write what I write, and then I throw it all at the wall and see what sticks. And what the songs that are a little heavier than others, I kind of round all of them up and try to find a common thread between them. And for From the Ground Up, it was a lot of songs that I had written years ago that never got...
Said the 26-year-old.
When I was a teenager.
Really?
And, they never got the band treatment that I felt like they deserved because they were written with a band in mind. These songs, not so much. I'm really focusing on just the chord structure and the words. And after realizing that and looking at this batch of songs, I said, let's just call it songs.
Yeah. So nothing tongue-in-cheek about the title
at
all?
It's a little tongue-in-cheek.
Yeah, all right. Okay.
It's a little tongue-in-cheek.
Which instrument did you play first, the piano or the guitar?
I played the piano, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, yeah, that was. I thought guitars were ridiculous until I was probably 13. Just because you have to string it and tune it, and,
right?
You know, only one hand actually plays chromatic.
It's funny how teenage boys sort of change their view of the guitar when they become teenage.
Right around
boys.
13, yeah, because you can't carry a piano around.
So, but it's all piano for us today.
That's right.
The next song is called Jericho. Now, this is from that first album,
right?
From the Ground Up,
right?
So, you know, is this like a recast version of the song?
You know, I kind of, when I write songs, not when I used to write songs, I would take a lot of pride in the fact that they could be switched from piano to guitar. That was a conscious effort, because you never know if you're going to be sitting at a piano and you don't have a guitar.
I would think the opposite would be more likely, that you'd be in a place that didn't have a piano and you have to rely on the guitar.
You never know. You never know. Some people have pianos sitting in their houses and the guitar's miles and miles away and you want to play a certain song that you've written.
Okay. So this is one that could go either way.
That's right.
All right. You want to play it for us?
Yeah.
On the Steinway. John Fulbright is my guest here in the Soundcheck studio, and he is playing for us solo. This song is called Jericho.
Into this world, I wait on something to unfurl. Thinking back on toys and paper dolls. Now all I ever find. Try to find myself out east. Maybe find comfort there at least. When I got there, all I found, somebody burned it to the ground. Let your trumpets blow round the walls of Jericho. Let your mighty voices sound till the walls
searched for days for you out west. And I was greeted like a guest. To the desert's open arms, finding not your childlike charms. And if these thoughts I hold are true, well, I lay down my traveling shoes. Let the vines grow over me. Let the earth swallow my dreams. And let my trumpet blow. Precious things outside your gate, I will stand tall as you cower behind your wall, look inside yourself to see. Walls appear to be, let your soul step out to breathe. Swallow whole your dignity. And let your trumpet blow.
John Fulbright, very nicely done. One-man band here in our soundcheck studio. He's at the piano, playing the harmonica, and of course singing. The song is called Jericho, and that is from John's first record, the Grammy-nominated From the Ground Up. John Fulbright with me here on soundcheck. Jericho is not the only example of kind of biblical imagery on that first record.
Right.
I didn't find so much of that on the new record, on Songs. Was that a conscious decision or just a function of a second album and a different sound, whatever?
Yeah, I mean, I don't write like that so much anymore. The biblical language, I grew up in that world, in that language. If you had something to say and you needed a good, strong way to say it, that's a pretty strong way to say it.
Yeah. But this album, a little more, it seems like the stories in the songs are more intimate and more personal than the kind of big biblical imagery might.
It's a little more straightforward. You can get kind of mixed up in that biblical imagery. It's a very sharp tool that you maybe shouldn't overuse. People start to get confused if you use it too much.
Now, both with the last album and this album, people who've been reviewing the records have compared you to, among other people, Randy Newman. Was he someone you listened to growing up?
I mean, I couldn't shine Randy's shoes. That's not even, I don't even like that comparison. It makes me uncomfortable. You know, it's Randy, not growing up, Randy's whole, his style of writing has been, in the past couple of years, has been a pretty huge influence on me. And, you know, piano players, we got to stick together.
Right. Even if it's only to shine his shoes.
Yeah, I would.
The album is called Songs. It is the second, the latest from John Fulbright. It is out now. What happens next? You were on the road a long time after the first record. Is it likely to be the same thing now?
It's exactly the same. Yeah, back on the road. This one, I'm more solo touring this time, so I'm bouncing around like a pinball around the world for this one. It's a lot of work, but you know, I want to get this record out to as many ears as I can.
And it beats sitting in a cubicle at a computer.
I think it does. I don't know. I've never done it.
Well, John, it's been a real pleasure having you performing solo for us here in the Soundcheck studio today. Thank you very much.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
You got a song you can play us out with?
That's right.
This one is called She Knows, and it, too, is from the new album Songs by John Fulbright, back at our piano on Soundcheck.
She knows a thing or two about me. She didn't learn in passing. She knows I'm scared of the dark. She knows I'll bleed on command. She knows I'll shut my mouth if she'll take my hand. And just how cruel I can be. She knows a thing or two about me. And she knows a thing or two about rain. She calls it holy water. It rained the day she was born. And oh, how her mama cried. The rain I felt with her, I swear, was electrified. She washes away my. She knows a thing or two about rain. Where could she go that I would not follow, leaving my sorrow behind? And she knows a thing or two about love. She learned long before me. The day is already done before it has begun. She's the only one that commands the sun. And with her I will be. She knows a thing or two about me. She knows a thing or two about me.
John Fulbright, live in the Soundcheck studio, performing his song, She Knows. That also appears on his new album called Songs. You can listen to all of our in-studio performances on demand over at soundcheck.org and follow us on Twitter at Soundcheck for updates about all our live 2 p.m. in-studio webcasts and more. Tomorrow on the show, our Summer of 94 series continues with a visit from Chris Melanfi, a regular guest and certified pop chart junkie. He'll tell us about the genre then called modern rock and how it roared on the charts in that summer 20 years ago. Our Summer of 94 theme song was produced by our engineer Paul Schneider and sung by Tim Rudiman of the Dexter Lake Club Band. I'm John Schaefer. This is Soundcheck.